So whether we accuse, or whether we think that the word accuse overdignifies an attitude toward a quasi-astronomer, or mere figment in a super dream, our acceptance is that Le Verrier never did formulate observations. That he picked out observations that could be formulated. That of this type are all formulas. That, if Le Verrier had not been himself helplessly hypnotized, or if he had had in him more than a tincture of realness, never could he have been beguiled by such a quasi-process, but that he was hypnotized, and so extended, or transferred, his condition to others, that upon March 22, 1877, he had this earth bristling with telescopes, with the rigid and almost inanimate forms of astronomers behind them. And not a blessed thing of any unusuality was seen upon that day or succeeding days. But that the science of astronomy suffered the slightest in prestige? It couldn't. The spirit of 1877 was behind it. If, in an embryo, some cells should not live up to the phenomena of their era, the others will sustain the scheduled appearances. Not until an embryo enters the mammalian stage are cells of the reptilian stage false cells. It is our acceptance that there were many equally authentic reports upon large planetary bodies that had been seen near the Sun, that, of many, Le Verrier picked out six, not then deciding that all the other observations related to still other large planetary bodies, but arbitrarily, or hypnotically, disregarding or heroically disregarding every one of them that to formulate at all he had to exclude falsely. The denouement killed him, I think. I'm not at all inclined to place him with the Grays and Hitchcocks and Simonses. I'm not, because, though it was rather unsportsmanlike to put the date so far ahead, he did give a date, and he did stick to it with such a high approximation. I think Le Verrier was translated to the positive absolute. The disregarded observation, of July 26, 1819, by Gruthinson, but that was of two bodies that crossed the Sun together. Nature, 14-469. That, according to the astronomer, J.R. Hind, Benjamin Scott, City Chamberlain of London, and Mr. Ray, had, in 1847, seen a body similar to Vulcan cross the Sun. Similar observation by Hind and Lowe, March 12, 1849, L'Annee Scientifique UE, 1876-9. Nature, 14-505. Body of apparent size of Mercury, seen, January 29, 1860, by F.A.R. Russell and four other observers, crossing the Sun. De Vico's observation of July 12, 1837, Observatory, 2-424. L'Annee Scientifique, 1865-16. That another amateur astronomer, M. Cumbray, of Constantinople, had written to Le Verrier, that, upon the 8th of March, 1865, he had seen a black point, sharply outlined, traverse the disk of the Sun. It detached itself from a group of sunspots near the limb of the Sun, and took 48 minutes to reach the other limb. Figuring upon the diagram sent by M. Cumbray, a central passage would have taken a little more than an hour. This observation was disregarded by Le Verrier, because his formula required about four times that velocity. The point here is that these other observations are as authentic as those that Le Verrier included, that, then, upon data as good as the data of Vulcan, there must be other Vulcans. The heroic and defiant disregard, then, of trying to formulate one, omitting the others, which, by orthodox doctrine, must have influenced it greatly, if all were in the relatively narrow space between Mercury and the Sun. Observation upon another such body, of April 4, 1876, by M. Weber, of Berlin. As to this observation, Le Verrier was informed by Wolff, in August, 1876, L'Annee Scientifique, 1876-7. It made no difference, so far as can be known, to this notable positivist. Two other observations noted by Hind and Denning, London Times, November 3, 1871, and March 26, 1873. Monthly notices of the RAS, 20-100. Standocker, February, 1762, Lichtenberg, November 19, 1762, Hoffman, May, 1764, Dangos, January 18, 1798, Stark, February 12, 1820. An observation by Schmidt, October 11, 1847, is said to be doubtful, but, upon page 192, it is said that this doubt had arisen because of a mistaken translation, and two other observations by Schmidt are given, October 14, 1849, and February 18, 1850. Also an observation by Loft, January 6, 1818. Observation by Steinheibel, at Vienna, April 27, 1820, monthly notices, 1862. Hasse had collected reports of 20 observations like Lascarbault's. The list was published in 1872, by Wolff. Also there are other instances like Gruthinsen's. Amer. Jour. Sci. 2-28-446. Report by Pastorf that he had seen twice in 1836, and once in 1837, two round spots of unequal size moving across the sun, changing position relatively to each other, and taking a different course, if not orbit, each time, that, in 1834, he had seen similar bodies pass six times across the disk of the sun, looking very much like Mercury in his transits. March 22, 1876. But to point out Leverrier's poverty-stricken average or discovering planets upon a 50 per cent basis would be to point out the low percentage of realness in the quasi-myth stuff of which the whole system is composed. We do not accuse the textbooks of omitting this fiasco, but we do note that theirs is the conventional adaptation here of all beguilers who are in difficulties. The diverting of attention. It wouldn't be possible in a real existence, with real mentality, to deal with, but I suppose it's good enough for the quasi-intellects that stupefy themselves with textbooks. The trick here is to gloss over Leverrier's mistake, and blame Lascarbault he was only an amateur had delusions. The reader's attention is led against Lascarbault by a report from M. Lias, director of the Brazilian Coast Survey, who, at the time of Lascarbault's supposed observation had been watching the sun in Brazil, and, instead of seeing even ordinary sun spots, had noted that the region of the supposed transit was of uniform intensity. But the meaninglessness of all utterances in quasi-existence. Uniform intensity turns our way as much as against us, or someday some brain will conceive a way of beating Newton's third law if every reaction, or resistance, is, or can be, interpretable as stimulus instead of resistance. If this could be done in mechanics, there's a way open here for someone to own the world specifically in this matter. Uniform intensity means that Lascarbault saw no ordinary sunspot, just as much as it means that no spot at all was seen upon the sun. Continuing the interpretation of a resistance as an assistance, which can always be done with mental forces making us wonder what applications could be made with steam and electric forces, we point out that invisibility in Brazil means parallax quite as truly as it means absence, and, inasmuch as Vulcan was supposed to be distant from the sun, we interpret denial as corroboration method of course of every scientist, politician, theologian, high school debater. So the textbooks, with no especial cleverness, because no especial cleverness is needed, lead the reader into contempt for the amateur of orgeries, and forgetfulness of Leverrier and some other subject is taken up. But our own acceptance. That these data are as good as ever they were. That, if someone of eminence should predict an earthquake, and if there should be no earthquake at the predicted time, that would discredit the prophet, but data of past earthquakes would remain as good as ever they had been. It is easy enough to smile at the illusion of a single amateur. The mass formation. Fritsch, Stark, de Kuyper, Sidebotham, Lascarbault, Lummis, Gruthinsen, De Vico, Scott, Ray, Russell, Hind, Lowe, Cumbrae, Weber, Standocker, Lichtenberg, Dangos, Hoffman, Schmidt, Loft, Steinheibel, passed Orff. These are only the observations conventionally listed relatively to an intramercurial planet. They are formidable enough to prevent our being diverted, as if it were all the dream of a lonely amateur, but they're a mere advance guard. From now on, other data of large celestial bodies, some dark and some reflecting light, will pass and pass and keep on passing. So that some of us will remember a thing or two, after the procession's over possibly. Taking up only one of the listed observations. Or our impression that the discrediting of Le Verrier has nothing to do with the acceptability of these data. In the London Times, January 10, 1860, is Benjamin Scott's account of his observation. That, in the summer of 1847, he had seen a body that had seemed to be the size of Venus, crossing the sun. He says that, hardly believing the evidence of his sense of sight, he had looked for someone, whose hopes or ambitions would not make him so subject to illusion. He had told his little son, aged 5 years, to look through the telescope. The child had exclaimed that he had seen a little balloon crossing the sun. Scott says that he had not had sufficient self-reliance to make public announcement of his remarkable observation at the time, but that, in the evening of the same day, he had told Dr. Dick, F.R.A.S., who had cited other instances. In the Times, January 12, 1860, is published a letter from Richard Abbott, F.R.A.S., that he remembered Mr. Scott's letter to him upon this observation, at the time of the occurrence. I suppose that, at the beginning of this chapter, one had the notion that, by hard scratching through musty old records, we might rake up vague, more than doubtful data, distortable into what's called evidence of unrecognized worlds or constructions of planetary size. But the high authenticity and the support and the modernity of these of the accursed that we are now considering, and our acceptance that ours is a quasi-existence, in which above all other things, hopes, ambitions, emotions, motivations, stands attempt to positivize, that we are here considering an attempt to systematize that is sheer fanaticism in its disregard of the unsystematizable, that it represented the highest good in the 19th century, that it is monomania, but heroic monomania that was quasi-divine in the 19th century.